and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, July 24th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakrose. Cerro Gordo COVID-19 update. Latest stats, Iowa Public Health Association calls for mask mandate. Data snapshot for Friday, July 24th. 41,000 total lab confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Iowa. 497 total lab-confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Cerro Gordo. 131 total recovered in Cerro Gordo. 820 deaths in Iowa. 16 deaths in Cerro Gordo. 10,966 COVID-19 tests administered at the mobile testing unit. A status report of monitoring and testing of COVID-19 in Iowa, including county-level data, provided by the Iowa Department of Public Health, can be found at coronavirus.iowa.gov. Vision North Iowa partners launch new campaign to keep North Iowa open. The Vision North Iowa partners are launching a new marketing campaign to help keep North Iowa open. Starting this week, you will see a 30-second commercial on social media and KIMT highlighting various business and community leaders who are asking you to wear a mask. To view the video, visit YouTube, and YouTube is actually YouTube.com/B=OQ C T G D 1J G. And I'm sure if you go to youtube.com and Google Vision North Iowa spot, you'll find it as well. A reminder, guidance for planning and organizing events and large gatherings. CG Public Health and the JIC partners would like to remind everyone that guidance for organizing events and large gatherings is available at cghealth.com. Iowa Public Health Association calls for mask mandate, flexibility for schools. In a release following the governor's latest proclamation, the Iowa Public Health Association calls for a mask mandate and flexibility for individual schools regarding their return to learn plans. For more information, visit iowapha.org. Nothing to lose. Mason City Man opening Hero Place in Clear Lake. Business at Hero Hut in Mason City has been good to Jesus Suarez and his family. But when he saw an opportunity to open a similar restaurant on his own in Clear Lake, he decided to go for it. "I'm young," said Juarez, 21, of Mason City. "I don't have anything to lose." Hero Hut, which is located in the same building as a laundromat and liquor store at 18 North Monroe Avenue, opened in 2016, and since then it's been managed by Juarez, his brother, and his father. Juarez, a 2017 Mason City High School graduate, started managing the business in 2019 while he was attending North Iowa Area Community College. "I've put in all my energy at the Hero Hut, so why not put it in a place that is on my own?" he said. "I'm building it literally from the start." Juarez and his brother, Raul Juarez, 24, are planning to open Hero Place at 300 Main Street in Clear Lake in early August. The location was previously occupied by Backyard Deli and Catering, owned by Scott McCormick. McCormick announced in November that the decades-old family business in downtown Clear Lake was for lease, and earlier this month, he announced the opening of Hero Place at the Backyard Deli and Catering's Facebook page. "It's a sad but also a very exciting day," he said. "Myself and family want to thank Clear Lake and surrounding communities for the support that you have given our family for the last 40 years. Many memories on that special corner. The new net tenants are nervous but very excited to get up and running." Juarez said he was considering a move to Southbridge Mall in Mason City when his food distributor notified him of the leasing opportunity in Clear Lake. He signed the lease in June and has been preparing the space cosmetically and operationally for his business to open before summer's end. Juarez wanted to open Hero Place on August 1st, but he said there are a lot of things that have to be done before that can happen, so he's hoping for an early August start date. He was drawn to the Clear Lake location because of the people and the vibe, as well as its proximity and visibility to City Beach, City Park, and the lake, Juarez says. "I really enjoy being here," he said. "It brings you happiness to be here." Juarez believes Gyro Place's food will fit well in Clear Lake. Gyro Place's menu, which will be comparable to Gyro Hut, will feature popular items like street tacos and gyros, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and appetizers. Favorites in Mason City, he said, include gyro fries, which are fries piled high with gyro meat, cucumber sauce, nacho cheese, and jalapenos, and the street tacos. Gyro Place will also have a Philly-style gyro with bell peppers, onion, and Swiss cheese, a smokehouse gyro with grilled onion and barbecue sauce, a jumbo gyro with a 9-inch pita filled with cucumber sauce, tomato, and onion, and a loaded fries gyro with fries, tomato, and cucumber sauce. It's really good food, Juarez said, noting it's authentic. He said he doesn't initially plan to offer the fried chicken like he does in Mason City, but will consider adding it to the menu later. And what happens to the Mason City location when Gyro Place opens next month? Juarez isn't sure. He said his family is considering managing both locations, but nothing has been determined yet. I have pretty good business over there, he said. It's not that I don't like it. I just want to do something for my own. I want to go for it. Juarez said he wants Gyro Place to succeed in Clear Lake for his wife, Layla, and their 4-month-old daughter, as well as the community. The business will employ about 6 of his family members. When Gyro Place opens in Clear Lake, its hours will be from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., Tuesday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to midnight, Friday and Saturday, and 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday. It will be closed on Mondays. Iowa universities forecast big tuition losses. Iowa's 3 public universities expect to take a $53 million hit this budget year from tuition freezes and enrollment declines and incur even more losses from cuts in state appropriations and research activity. In all, the universities project to generate $65.4 million less this budget year than last due to the COVID-19-driven losses. The anticipated enrollment drops, coupled with an earlier decision to freeze tuition rates, is expected to shrink income by $14.8 million at the University of Iowa, $33.4 million at Iowa State University, and $4.8 million at the University of Northern Iowa. The 3 institutions also must split an $8 million cut in state appropriations, divided about 40-40-20 percent between the campuses, with UI and ISU each losing $3.2 million in state support and the smaller UNI losing $1.5 million. The reductions approved by lawmakers affect every special purpose unit across the campuses except the UI-based State Hygienic Lab, which received a $525,578 boost in the budget year that just ended for its work processing COVID-19 tests. Although the lab was spared state cuts in the new budget that began July 1st, it's not getting any increases either. In outlining their new budgets, each university highlighted the pandemic that's created unprecedented challenges across their campuses, which essentially shut down mid-March, forcing instruction online. In looking to reopen to in-person classes this fall, the campuses expect significant costs in providing enough protective gear, sanitization supplies, physical barriers, and cleaning services. Due to the tens of millions each campus already expected to lose from COVID-19, the schools have launched cost-cutting measures that include layoffs, furloughs, salary reductions, and curtailed programs. UI President Bruce Harreld has volunteered a 50% cut from his $590,000 base pay for the rest of the year, amounting to a one-time savings of $270,416. ISU President Wendy Winterstein is taking a 10% cut for the budget year, amounting to $59,000. And UNI President Mark Nook is taking an 11.8% cut to his $357,110 salary, amounting to $42,138. Nook also will take a 50% cut in deferred compensation. The other presidents have not announced changes in their deferred compensation plans, which are due for 2023 payouts of $2.33 million to Harreld and over $1 million to Winterstein. Other cost-cutting measures underway across the universities include 5% pay cuts for all vice presidents at UNI. The UI is phasing out funding for Hancher Auditorium, requiring the venue to become self-sufficient, imposing hiring and salary freezes, and laying off instructors in some units. The university will continue to use the budget model to identify, evaluate, and possibly discontinue or close activities in which state resources are no longer sufficient to support these functions, according to a UI report to the Board of Regents. Scarce resources will continue to be directed to student success, research, and economic development programs. At ISU, the administration is shaving 2% from its employee retirement match, temporarily freezing most renovation and capital projects, and requiring vice president or presidential approval to fill vacancies, in addition to across-the-board budget reductions. ISU also is rolling out a voluntary retirement incentive available to about 1,200 faculty and staff. Savings will depend on the number of approved participants, according to the regents, who were asked to approve incentive programs at a meeting next week. The regents are eliminating immediately their $873,940 support for Iowa Public Radio. The public broadcaster also is projecting decreases in fundraising revenue for memberships, underwriting, and events due to the anticipated economic issues related to the pandemic and no scheduled revenue-generating events. When regents during their meeting this Wednesday consider approving these cuts and the university's pared-down budgets, they won't include athletics projections, which they typically do. Due to the volatility of the fall sports schedules resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic, the detailed athletic budgets will be considered for board approval at its September meeting, board documents say. Among the self-supporting enterprises across the campuses are the residence systems at UI and ISU, both of which are bracing for budgetary losses this year, with fewer students expected to live on campus in the fall and having no summer revenue. At UI, anticipated occupancy has been reduced from 6,225 to 5,700. Total revenue projections have dropped nearly $8 million, and its total fund balance projections have dropped $12.7 million. ISU has reduced its occupancy from 10,238 to 9,464, with revenue expected to fall $7.7 million. The Linden and Oak Elm halls will be reserved for in-system students needing isolation and quarantine housing, according to the budget documents. ISU's resident system reserve funds are projected to increase due to the cancellation of previously planned improvement projects. And although UNI's resident system is not projecting as many losses, it's looking at nearly 200 fewer students. ISU took exception to a $62,472 cut to its veterinary diagnostic laboratory, which it touts as protecting animal and human health and advancing Iowa's $32.5 billion animal agriculture economy. The cuts, according to the documents, come amid soaring demand for the lab's diagnostic services and as it is being asked to commit substantial resources to the state hygienic laboratory for COVID-19 testing. Cuts to the lab line will substantially weaken the ability to prevent and respond to disease outbreaks in the Iowa livestock and poultry industry, and it will weaken the state's ability to respond to COVID-19, the documents state. The ISU lab's caseload is the largest of any like it in the country. Rita Hart, cooperation needed to safely reopen schools. Former classroom teacher Rita Hart, who is running for the U.S. House in Iowa's 2nd District on Thursday, called for more collaboration at all levels to safely reopen schools this year. "We can do this," Hart said during a virtual roundtable discussion with parents, teachers, and a school board member about the challenges schools face because of the coronavirus pandemic. "We need to do this because it's so important that our children get the education that they deserve." "If there's an upside," Hart said, "it's that COVID-19 has created an opportunity to look at education in a new way and to get the resources here that can really help us to do a better job, not only for this fall, but for all the falls to come," said Hart, a Wheatland Democrat who hopes to succeed retiring Representative Dave Lobsack. Her panelists called for guidance from Des Moines and Washington, but also called for greater local control. Tara Soche, whose children attend Iowa City schools, was upset that after the school district laid out a plan for remote learning until at least October, Governor Kim Reynolds called for in-person classes in August. There needs to be local control so that the individual communities can assess what's happening in our community, Soche said. So I'm very frustrated right now. North Scott School Board member Molly Bergfeld also called for local control and more guidance from Des Moines on critical decisions, such as protocols when someone in a school tests positive for COVID-19. What does that mean for the class? What does it mean for the building? She said. Schools, she said, also need funding for expenses they didn't budget for, such as personal protective equipment, more computers and internet access, and the need to run more bus routes to ensure distance between students. That's where we need some state and federal funding to ensure that we can provide for the safe environment when our kids do go back to school, Bergfeld said. Hart agreed, saying Bergfeld's concerns highlight the need for all parties to work together. If we don't listen to the people that are affected most by the problem, we are not going to effectively come up with the solutions to it, she said. Farmers rip Hart for backing limits on livestock production. Iowa farmers questioned a Democratic congressional candidate's support for agriculture after she endorsed a plan by East Coast liberals they said would limit opportunities for livestock producers and for young Iowans to farm. In my view, it would wipe out thousands of family farms in Iowa, said State Senator Ken Rosenboom, a Republican from Oskaloosa, whose family farm operation has involved five generations. Senator Cory Booker's Farms System Reform Act, which Democratic U.S. House 2nd District hopeful Rita Hart has endorsed, would place a moratorium on concentrated animal feeding operations and phase them out by 2040. It would hit farm operations with 1,000 cattle, 2,500 hogs, or 82,000 hens. The effect would be to reduce food production, increase food prices, and destroy thousands of Iowa jobs, Rosenboom said. And not a small thing. It would take food off the table for millions of people around the world, he said on a call organized by GOP State Senator Marionette Miller Meeks, who also is seeking to succeed retiring Representative Dave Loebsack in the 2nd District. The Hart campaign, however, denied that she had endorsed Booker's plan. During a meeting with the Iowa Farmers Union, Hart, who farms with her husband, said she agreed with the principles of Booker's legislation to reform CAFOs, but wanted to learn more about the plan that has not been endorsed by farm groups. Family farmers are having a harder time succeeding because of consolidation in agriculture, Hart said. And I'm very much interested in working on any kind of plan that promotes a different way of going about that so that independent family farms can continue to provide a way of life for so many families and contribute in a real way to feeding the world, Hart said. However, changes in the industry have created opportunities for Iowans to return to the farm, said Jasper County hog producer Thad Niermeyer. During the run-up to the Iowa caucus, he confronted Booker about the impact the plan would have on the hog farm he and his brother operate. His response to me was, "Well, we're going to empower you," Niermeyer said. "I believe that we don't need to be empowered. He just needs to get the heck out of the way." The legislation won't empower farmers, according to State Senator Annette Sweeney, a Republican from Alden, who called Hart a reactionary pawn for signing on to Booker's plan. "He is going to strip our young farmers of the ability to be able to come home to the family farm and continue that legacy. Starting with a small livestock operation is the way many younger Iowans get into farming," said Emily Snyder, a fourth-generation Johnson County farmer. She and her husband, Mike, farm with her father, Ray Slatch. "The plan Hart is backing is extremely hurtful for livestock production," Snyder said. "It shows me that they do not know much about the farm industry, and the way Rita Hart is embracing this act is even worse because she thinks this would be good for Iowa when it would be devastating." Rockwell student receives $2,000 scholarship. Conservation can lead to some serious cash. A 2020 West Fork Community School District grad, Colin Witte, received a $2,000 scholarship through a program from the Conservation Districts of Iowa. According to a press release, the Rockwell native was selected by the Cerro Gordo Soil and Water District and took second place in the CDI's annual Iowa Scholarship Program. The way it works is that the CDI partners up with 100 conservation districts across the state to boost the higher ed ambitions of Iowa students who are interested in agriculture and conservation by offering them a scholarship. Any of those students pursuing relevant programs then qualify to apply for the scholarship. Parents, Roger and Brandy Witte. Activities. Colin has been active in FFA, National Honor Society, Student Government, Boy Scouts, 4-H, and St. Peter Lutheran Church. He has served in many leadership roles. Colin also has numerous awards at the local and state levels in FFA. In his spare time, Colin enjoys the outdoors and farming. After graduation, he is undecided about which community college and will be studying agriculture. North Iowans, election officials will have an easier option for voting this fall. 2020 hasn't been anything resembling typical or normal for North Iowans. This fall's election won't be any different. On Friday, July 17th, state legislators announced that they would allow Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate to mail absentee voter request forms for the election on November 3rd to every registered voter in the state. After the unanimous vote came in, Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer, a Republican from Ankeny, said that the decision was about accessibility. "We want this election to be as accessible as possible. We need it to be predictable for campaigns. We need it to be uniform across the state so Iowans in every county are treated the same, and we need it to be as secure as possible." This proposal accomplishes all of those things. Not only is the decision making things easier for voters across the state, including here in North Iowa, it's making things easier for election officials as well. "I'm very excited about it, because if the secretary is sending them out, we don't have to send out the request forms on our own," Winnebago County Auditor Carla Weiss said. "It saves us money on the local level." Weiss laid out that while the state is sending the absentee voter request forms out, the actual absentee ballots for this election still go to county election officials. And if a form from the state somehow misses a voter, that person can still get a ballot request form from their county auditor's office. "We'll send out an absentee ballot request if someone asks for it. We're just not going to send it to everybody," Weiss said. Even with the increased vote-from-home option, Weiss thinks that there will be a decent amount of people who choose to do in-person voting on November 3rd. "I really don't expect it to be a whole lot different than elections in the past, because there are people that like to vote absentee and people who like to vote at the polls. Of course, when people do vote this fall, it won't be quite like past years, as a number of measures will be in place to make in-person voters as safe as possible during a pandemic. In the June primaries, that meant scaling back on the number of polling places and making sure to put barriers up in each location while also sanitizing surfaces and ensuring social distancing. For Hancock County, which also whittled down its number of polling places in June, the decision is a benefit because the auditor's office had not planned on sending out request forms to all the voters in the county. Unless a voter calls and requests a form, but we weren't planning on sending them to all," Hancock County Auditor Michelle Eisenman said, "unless a voter calls and requests a form. As to whether or not all of those forms and absentee ballots will make things tougher for election officials, Cerro Gordo County Auditor Adam Wedmore isn't too worried. It is more hands-on work, but we'll have sufficient staff to get those absentee ballots processed and counted," he said. "There's more front-end work, but on day of, it actually goes very smoothly and very quickly." Though the decision was welcomed by state legislators, there was some consternation. Democrats tried, unsuccessfully, to allow county auditors to proceed with those separate absentee ballot request mailings, but Whitfer argued that Iowans need confidence that election laws will be uniform, secure, and free from fraud across the state. "You won't have 18 counties sending out absentee requests and 81 not sending them out," he said. To that, Representative Sharon Steckman, a Democrat from Mason City, said that GOP legislators had muddled the process, and Representative Todd Pritchard, a Democrat from Charles City, added that Republican leaders were engaging in scare tactics aimed at misleading the public. As of now, Pate's office intends to finalize absentee ballot request forms by the end of the month and start mailing them soon after. Iowa governor signs new proclamation continuing public health emergency declaration. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed a new proclamation today, continuing the public health disaster emergency for another 30 days. The proclamation extends public health mitigation measures currently in place for businesses and other establishments. This includes the requirements for bars and restaurants to ensure 6 feet of physical distance between each group or individual dining or drinking, to ensure all patrons have a seat at a table or bar, and to limit congregating together closer than 6 feet. Requirements for social distancing, hygiene, and other public health measures to reduce the risk of transmission also remain in place for gyms, casinos, salons, theaters, and other establishments without change. The proclamation also extends many of the previously issued regulatory relief measures necessary to respond to this public health disaster, including those related to healthcare, professional licensure, educational workforce, and expirations of driver's licenses. Some provisions have not been extended, including the suspension of the requirement for retailers to accept empty bottles and cans for redemption of the container deposit. That statutory requirement will resume on July 26, 2020. The proclamation is now in effect until 11:59 p.m. on Sunday, August 23, 2020. Reynolds extends restaurant rules amid more virus cases. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed a proclamation Friday extending an order that bars and restaurants require patrons to remain at least 6 feet apart to limit the spread of the coronavirus. The proclamation also extends other requirements, including that bars and restaurant patrons each have seats at a table or bar and that operators maintain increased hygiene practices. In addition, the governor's order extends existing rules for fitness centers, casinos, senior citizen centers, and other businesses. Reynolds this week encouraged residents to wear masks in public, but has declined to issue requirements that people wear masks. She also has said local officials don't have the authority to institute mask orders. The governor noted she would not extend the suspension of a requirement that retailers accept empty cans and bottles for redemption of container deposits. The requirement that retailers take the containers will resume Sunday. Reynolds' actions came as Iowa's online virus tracker showed a total of 820 deaths from COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. It also showed 451 new confirmed cases by 10 a.m. Friday from the day before, bringing the state's total to nearly 41,000 cases. Hospitalizations for the virus were slightly down from 232 on Thursday. That included 72 who were being treated in intensive care units. Iowa reached a peak of 417 COVID-19 hospitalizations on May 6th. Available space and equipment to treat new patients in the state's hospitals remained steady, with 39% of the state's hospital beds available and 79% of its nearly 800 ventilators available on Friday. Police search for suspect after Norfolk woman killed. A man suspected of killing a Norfolk, Nebraska woman Friday is believed to have fled the area, police said. Norfolk Police Chief Don Miller said the woman was shot at a home early Friday and died during surgery. Gleaton had left the house before officers arrived. His car was later found near the village of Jackson, and it is possible that he is in the Sioux City area, Miller said. Gleaton is facing possible charges of first-degree murder, first-degree assault, possession of a firearm by a prohibited person, and use of a firearm to commit a felony, the Norfolk Daily News reported. Gleaton was out of prison on bond for third-degree domestic assault and first-degree trespassing. The woman who died was the victim in those cases, Miller said. Two other men were arrested when they went to a home connected to Gleaton with a handgun and intending to confront him, Miller said. Officers were at the house when the men arrived. And it looks like there's a paragraph, an early paragraph missing. I don't know what Gleaton's first name is. So that is the paragraph that's missing there. And I'm sorry about that. You're listening to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, July 24th, 2020 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Karen E. Pratt Delger. Karen E. Pratt Delger, 68, of Kanawha, passed away Tuesday, July 21st, at her home. Public graveside service will be held Monday, July 27th, at 10:30 a.m. in Amsterdam Township Cemetery near Kanawha, with Pastor Steve Couch officiating. Visitation will begin at 10 a.m. Monday, July 27th, at Amsterdam Township Cemetery near Kanawha. Those planning to attend the graveside service are invited to bring a lawn chair. Those in attendance will be asked to follow social distancing guidelines and encouraged to wear a face covering. Iowa juvenile accused of disemboweling dog, killing kitten. A Authorities in Des Moines have charged a juvenile with 2 counts of animal torture in the brutal deaths of a dog and a kitten, officials said. The incidents were discovered last week at a Des Moines apartment complex, the Animal Rescue League of Iowa said Friday in a news release. Animal services officers called to the complex on July 17th found an adult dog that had been disemboweled but was still alive, the release said. The ARL said the dog's injuries were so horrific that officers immediately euthanized the dog to end its suffering. Later the same day, animal officers were again sent to the complex where they found an 8-week-old kitten that had suffered a traumatic death. Animal torture is an aggravated misdemeanor in Iowa. The Associated Press generally does not name juveniles charged with crimes. Man charged with murder after shooting in Des Moines suburb. A man has been charged with murder after a woman shot in the head early Thursday in a Des Moines suburb died on Friday at a hospital. Pleasant Hill Police said Bethany Castro, 25, of Des Moines, died Friday morning after being shot early Thursday in the suburb just east of Des Moines. Philip Corama, 32, of Pleasant Hill, had initially been charged with attempted murder, but that charge was changed to first-degree murder after Castro's death, police said. Officers arrested Corama after spotting him speeding in a car near where the shooting occurred. He has been held in the Polk County Jail and is awaiting his first appearance in court. Hog farm manure tank leak causes fish kill in northwest Iowa. A hog farm manure tank leak was likely the cause of a fish kill in a northwestern Iowa tributary this week, state environmental officials have said. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources said the leak happened over the weekend near Albert City when an unknown amount of manure was released into the tributary. On Sunday, the DNR found some dead fish, manure, and elevated ammonia levels throughout 4 miles of the tributary, which connects to the North Raccoon River. The incident was reported by farm owner Chris Ellers, who suspected a failed valve on the manure tank, officials said. DNR concluded the spill did come from Ellers' farm, but was likely coming through underground tile lines. Agency is working with Ellers to get the spill cleaned up and is considering appropriate enforcement action to take. Former Iowan to head Counterterrorism Center. Christopher Miller, who was raised in Iowa City and graduated from City High, has been nominated to lead the National Counterterrorism Center. Miller, currently Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Combating Terrorism, was nominated by Senator Chuck Grassley, a Republican from Iowa. Previously, Miller was the top counterterrorism official at the National Security Council. The retired Army Special Forces officer focused on the Islamic State and hunting down al-Qaeda leadership. Miller, who has 30 years of government service, graduated from City High in 1983 and George Washington University in 1987, where he majored in history and participated in ROTC. Miller served multiple deployments to Afghanistan and Iraq. He and his wife live in Virginia. They have 3 children. Mayer's report lays out grim economic picture. The coronavirus pandemic may lead to an 8.1% decline in the U.S. gross domestic product in 2020 and persistently elevated unemployment in cities, according to an analysis commissioned by the U.S. Conference of Mayors, underscoring the challenge facing investors and borrowers in the municipal bond market. The report lays out daunting scenarios for America's communities that may prove not dire enough, given that it assumes the outbreak will taper this year. Metropolitan areas will suffer a $1.45 trillion drop in economic output in 2020, with the financial effects of the pandemic on par with the Great Recession a decade ago. The surge in COVID-19 infections and increases in hospitalizations and mortality threaten the nascent recovery in economic activity that began in May, underscoring the existence of extraordinary uncertainty about the course of the pandemic and the economic outlook, according to the report, which IHS Markit also prepared for the Council on Metro Economies and the New American City. The forecast presented here assumes that the pandemic is gradually brought under control in the second half of the year, an outcome that remains in doubt. The mayor's report adds to the series of pessimistic surveys from local governments grappling with the unprecedented health crisis. Counties face an estimated $202 billion budget hit from the pandemic through fiscal 2021, due to lost revenue, extra costs, and state funding cuts, according to a report released this week by the National Association of Counties, a lobbying group. As a result, buyers in the $3.9 trillion municipal bond market, which has rallied sharply from March, are favoring issuers more likely to provide resilient in the pandemic, said Parker Colvin, a managing director and underwriter at Raymond James Financial, Inc., who said demand is strongest for AA and AAA general obligation debt and essential service revenue bonds. AAA bonds have gained 4.38% year-to-date, while BAA securities are basically flat at 0.03%, according to Bloomberg Barclays indexes. Contrasting essential entities with those not considered so, municipals may soon experience a tale of two markets moving forward, wrote Matthew Gastall and Daryl Helsing, investment strategists at Morgan Stanley Wealth Management. Some cities, for instance, will be more hard hit than others because of factors such as reliance on sales taxes or economically sensitive industries and lack of reserves coming into the pandemic. According to the mayor's report, the average unemployment rate this year will be above 10% in 161 metros, 42% of all. It will be above 8% in 75% of metros and above 6% for most areas. Even if infections taper, metro job levels by the first quarter next year will remain 5.2% below that of the year earlier, about the same as was seen in the Great Recession, the report said. Chicago, Detroit, and New York are among cities whose employment will remain more than 10% below the figure of before the pandemic. Poll: 3 in 4 Americans back requiring wearing masks. 3 out of 4 Americans, including a majority of Republicans, favor requiring people to wear face coverings while outside their homes, a new poll finds, reflecting fresh alarm over spiking coronavirus cases and a growing embrace of government advice intended to safeguard public health. The survey from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research also finds that about 2/3 of Americans disapprove of how President Donald Trump is handling the outbreak, an unwelcome sign for the White House in an election year shaped by the nation's battle with the pandemic. More than 4 months after government stay-at-home orders first swept across the U.S., the poll spotlights an America increasingly on edge about the virus. The federal government's response is seen as falling short, and most Americans favor continued restrictions to stop the virus from spreading, even if they might hamstring the economy. Support for requiring masks is overwhelming among Democrats at 89%, but 58% of Republicans are in favor as well. The poll was conducted before Trump, who for months was dismissive of masks, said this week that it's patriotic to wear one. "Not wearing a mask, to me, poses a greater risk of spreading the COVID," said Darius Blevins, a 33-year-old Republican-leaning independent from Christiansburg, Virginia, who works in bank operations. Blevins said he wears a mask in public because it's much more effective than not wearing the mask. It's an opinion echoed by data analyst James Shaw, an independent who tilts Democratic. "If you understand the facts, there is really no issue," said Shaw, 56, of Noble, Illinois. "The data is crystal clear." For months, health officials have said several simple steps could save lives: washing hands frequently, staying away from crowds, especially while indoors, and pulling on a mask when heading out to the supermarket, the office, or a restaurant. And despite heated rhetoric about masks in some corners, 95% of Democrats and 75% of Republicans said they're wearing face coverings when leaving the house. Overall, 86% of Americans say they're doing so, compared with 73% in May. As the tally of coronavirus infections continues to climb, state and local governments have tried to find a balance between restrictions intended to limit the virus's spread, such as closing bars and indoor dining at restaurants, and getting workers back on the job after many businesses were idled and millions of people were left jobless by the initial stay-at-home orders. The U.S. has more than 3.9 million known cases of the coronavirus, with many more undetected, and more than 140,000 people have died of it this year. The U.S. leads the world in confirmed cases and deaths and ranks near the top on a per capita basis. California, which earned plaudits from health officials for aggressive early action that included the first statewide stay-at-home order, is among states seeing a surge. On Wednesday, California passed New York for the most confirmed cases, with 409,000. About half of Americans now say they're extremely or very worried about themselves or someone in their families being infected with the virus, about the same as in March, but a steep increase from June, when just 32% said they were that concerned. Republicans were less likely to be anxious about the illness, but concern rose among members of both parties. There were other signs of continued unease. Support for limiting the size of gatherings ticked back up to 66% after sliding for several months to a low of 59% in June. 85% of Americans say they're avoiding large groups. About half say they favor requiring people to stay in their homes except for essential trips. That number remained about steady since June. About half also favor requiring bars and restaurants to close. Nearly three-quarters of Americans said restrictions to slow the spread of the virus should override concerns about damaging the economy, but California retiree Kimberly Greenan said she favors relaxing rules and allowing people to get back to work. Greenan says she wears a mask on trips to the grocery store and at church, but not if she's walking in a park away from other people. "If people are vigilant, if they do what's right, this economy should come back," said Greenan, 67, a Republican and former accountant and teacher from Santee in the San Diego suburbs. "While tough steps were needed initially, for the most part, people are ready to get on with their lives," she said. "I don't think tying everyone down is the right move." The poll finds that only 24% of Americans approve of the federal government's response to the outbreak, disapproval hitting 55%, ticking up 7 percentage points from May. The remainder did not have an opinion either way. Trump's recent endorsement of masks came after he said in April that, "I just don't want to wear one." The Republican president was not seen wearing a mask in public until July 11th, months after the coronavirus took hold in the U.S. Editor's note. The AP-NORC poll of 1,057 adults was conducted July 16th through the 20th using a sample drawn from NORC's probability-based AmeriSpeak panel, which is designed to be representative of the U.S. population. The margin of sampling error for all respondents is plus or minus 4.3 percentage points. President calls off Florida events of GOP convention. President Donald Trump's hopes to salvage a four-night celebration for his re-election campaign have been thwarted by spiking coronavirus cases across the Sun Belt, with the president announcing Thursday that he was calling off the public events of the Republican National Convention, scheduled to be held in Florida. Trump had already moved the convention from North Carolina and dramatically scaled back its programming and attendance in Jacksonville in an effort to keep it on track. But the nights of infomercial programming and parties appeared to be both a health and political risk to Trump and his advisors, who feared that even going forward with the event, set to draw more than 10,000 people, would ultimately backfire on the president. "It's a different world, and it will be for a little while," Trump said, explaining his decision during one of his newly resuscitated White House briefings on the coronavirus. "To have a big convention is not the right time." A small subset of GOP delegates will still formally renominate Trump on August 24th in Charlotte, the original host city before Trump moved the ceremonial portions of the GOP convention to Florida last month, amid a dispute with North Carolina's Democratic leaders over holding an event indoors with maskless supporters. That event is scheduled to last just 4 hours in the morning. Trump's plans for the Florida convention were scaled back almost as quickly as the move was announced, as virus cases spiked in Florida and much of the country over the last month. Trump said he would deliver an acceptance speech in an alternate form, potentially online. Trump said thousands of his supporters and delegates wanted to attend the events in Florida, but "I just felt it was wrong to gather them in a virus hotspot." Some of them would have faced quarantine requirements when they returned to their home states from the convention. COVID-19 recovery can take a few weeks, even for young adults. Recovering from even mild coronavirus infections can take at least 2 to 3 weeks, according to U.S. research published Friday. Lingering symptoms can even affect otherwise healthy young adults. Among those aged 18 to 34 with no chronic illness, 1 in 5 were still experiencing COVID-19 symptoms after 2 to 3 weeks, the study found. Cough, fatigue, and body aches were among the most common persistent symptoms. Most previous research on long-lasting COVID-19 symptoms has focused on sicker hospitalized adults. Only 7% of patients in the new study needed hospital treatment. The study was led by researchers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They did phone surveys of 274 patients in several states who tested positive for the virus between the end of March and June 4th. Patients were queried 2 to 3 weeks after those tests. About one-third of middle-aged adults had not fully recovered, and for those 50 and older, the rate was almost half. Patients with chronic illness, especially obesity, were more likely to have lingering symptoms. The results are somewhat surprising, since with flu and many other viral infections, most patients recover completely within 2 weeks, said Dr. Wesley Self of Vanderbilt University. He leads a network of 14 medical centers that collaborated with the CDC on the study. Some of the current U.S. spikes in infections are thought to be driven by young adults gathering in bars and other places. Self said the study results should underscore that they should take social distancing very seriously. Although COVID-19 has disproportionately affected Blacks and Hispanics, they were not more likely than others in this study to face long recoveries. It's kind of a standard that has been set. Newman Catholic Baseball back at state yet again. The last time the Newman Catholic baseball team didn't make it to the Iowa State baseball tournament, George W. Bush was still the president. The first iPhone had just been released, and Barry Bonds was a month away from breaking Hank Aaron's all-time MLB home run record. For 13 consecutive seasons now, the Knights have been a constant presence at the year-end baseball clash in Des Moines and have walked away as Class 1A champions in 6 of those years, including each of the past 3. The Knights have won with both upperclassmen and 8th graders in key spots. In none of those 13 seasons did they lose more than 6 games. This season, the Knights have bounced back from losing 7 starters from the 2019 state title squad, including first-team All-State center fielder Josh Fitzgerald and ace pitcher Evan Paulus to graduation. Despite the absence of those senior standouts, the Knights have thrived yet again with several young players emerging in key spots. Senior Jacob Nelson is hitting .344 with a .517 on-base percentage in his first year as a starter and has also emerged as one of the team's top pitching options. Sophomore Jack Masnio is putting up a .542 on-base percentage, and freshman catcher Max Burt is second in the state with 40 RBIs. On the mound, freshman Doug Taylor and senior Sam Kratz have provided the team with a dominant 1-2 punch on the mound. Kratz has compiled a .46 ERA, a .78 whip, and 62 strikeouts on the season, while Taylor is close behind with a .54 ERA, a .81 whip, and 42 strikeouts. Winning at a high level is always about pitching, Mason City head coach Troy Rude said. Newman always has a legit ace every year. That's been their key this year. They have 2 very good pitchers leading the way for them. Head coach Alex Bohl has been the sole leader of the Knights since 2016, and before that served as co-head coach with longtime Newman skipper Tony Adams for several years. For Bohl, the team's perennial success is due to the culture the team has created. There is an expectation within the Newman baseball program not only to compete at a high level, but to compete for a state tournament berth and to compete for a state title every year, Bohl said. That has been set forth for probably a couple decades now. The time, the effort, the commitment to making yourself a good ball player and making yourself better every day, competing and playing Newman baseball. It's kind of a standard that has been set. The Knights are not the only team in town that has had lots of success of late. The Mason City baseball team has made it to state 3 times in the past 10 years and came up just 1 game short this season as the Mohawks lost to Waukee 6-5 in the sub-state finals on Wednesday night. Bohl and Rude give credit for both programs' continued success to the standout youth baseball programs that operate in the North Iowa area. That is one of the main reasons we have been so successful, is that our kids have had that opportunity, Bohl said. They've been playing baseball for 10 to 12 years before they even get to me at the high school level. They have an understanding of the game and an understanding of how to play and what it takes. Paulus, who was the Knights' leader in ERAs, strikeouts, and innings pitched last season as a senior, won 4 state titles with Newman Catholic after coming up as an 8th grader. He currently plays baseball at Kirkwood Community College and spent this season as an assistant coach under Bowl. Growing up and watching the continued success of the players and looking up to them, it makes you want to work just as hard, Paulus said. They show up every single year. It starts in February. We had 30 kids show up that very first day, and that doesn't happen at a lot of schools. Kids want to be there someday and play at the state tournament. This state tournament is starting a little bit different for the Knights. In past years, the team went in as an overwhelming favorite. In 2020, the Knights are a number 6 seed, and their 5 losses are the most of any team in the Class 1A bracket. Though Bowl chooses to focus only on the team's own play, his players have admitted to finding motivation in being overlooked this season. I would assume people are going to count us out and doubt us, Max Burt said back on the first day of practice. I don't expect anything less this season. I plan to go out there and give everything I've got. We've got a hard-working group of players that put in the work. The Knights will play St. Albert, Council Bluffs, in the state quarterfinal round at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday morning at Principal Park. St. Albert went 21-1 this season and is currently on an 11-game winning streak. The Knights are 17-5 and have won 4 straight games. After dominating their way to the past 3 state titles, the Knights are eager to go out and prove they can do it again. When we play teams that are way better than other schools, I think it's a little bit of disrespect, Paulus said of the Knights getting the number 6 seed. At the same time, every single team has to win 3 games to be at the top at the end. It doesn't really matter who you play, it's how you play when you get down there. Digest. London. Allegations that President Donald Trump's envoy to Britain made inappropriate remarks about women and minorities and may have violated federal ethics rules are roiling the U.S. Embassy in London, current and former U.S. officials said. Obama video. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden and former President Barack Obama stepped up their attacks on President Donald Trump and defended their time in the White House in a video posted online Thursday, showing their first in-person meeting since the coronavirus outbreak began. Slander. China said Thursday that malicious slander is behind an order by the U.S. government to close its consulate in Houston, Texas, maintaining that its officials never operated outside ordinary diplomatic rules. Mars mission. China launched its most ambitious Mars mission yet on Thursday in a bold attempt to join the United States in successfully landing a spacecraft on the red planet. The U.S. aims to launch Perseverance, its most sophisticated Mars rover ever, from Cape Canaveral, Florida, next week. Confrontation. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's outrage over a Republican lawmaker's verbal assault broadened into an extraordinary moment on the House floor Thursday as she and other Democrats assailed a sexist culture of accepting violence and violent language against women, whose adherents include President Donald Trump. Markets. The S&P 500 fell 1.2% as other stock indexes around the world were mixed, while gold rose again through the uncertainty to touch its highest price in nearly 9 years. Treasury yields and oil prices fell. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe-Gazette for Friday, July 24th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. Shortly after modern humans arrived in Europe, the Neanderthals disappeared, and scientists think we had something to do with it. Neanderthals, or their direct ancestors, migrated out of Africa and into the Middle East and Europe around 250,000 years ago. Soon, they were well adapted to the environment. Large eyes helped them see in the longer nights and darker winters. Stout bodies helped them retain heat and handle large prey, and provided space for the large liver and kidneys needed for a diet heavy in protein. Their brains were as big as ours, but spent processing power on their greater visual and motor abilities. This may not have allowed them to develop higher communication or conceptual thinking to match ours, which may have been their downfall. Modern humans arrived on the scene 45,000 years ago, less physically adapted, but more mentally adaptable. We had cooperative hunting methods superior to the Neanderthals, allowing us to outcompete them for food, and perhaps reducing the large herbivore populations that they depended on. We also had superior tools and weapons. When there were conflicts between the groups, as there have been among tribes throughout history, our superior technology probably allowed us to prevail. But we weren't only fighting. There must have been considerable interbreeding, since we can find 1-3% of the Neanderthal genome in modern man. Which means the Neanderthals never completely disappeared. A little bit of them is alive in us today. I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.